welcome to today's installment of Open World Chat. I'm John Odom, and I'm here with my co-host Leanne Allen.
And hey, everyone.
We have another interview today with Bleeding Cool publisher Rich Johnston. That's good.
But I don't think people will get the context.
Right.
But
It's a very heavily traveled, if you don't know it already, genre website. They talk a lot about comics, but also video games, movies. Yeah, as I say, it draws a lot of attention from the comics industry because Rich knows a lot of stuff. He's been that guy for information leaking out of the comics industry going back well before he started Bleeding Cool.
One of the interesting things about Rich is he brings the European perspective of this industry rather than a U.S. perspective. I think we see the U.S. perspective, you know, obviously this is a progressive podcast, and so the progressive political views in the U.S. Have a different concept of what it means to be conservative than they do in Europe. And he has some very interesting things to say about that.
Yeah, about superheroes in particular, really. So, I mean, we'll get to that. It's fascinating. We invited him on to talk about Comicsgate, quote-unquote, and his perspective on that is also unique in that he really focuses on sort of the industry side of it. And Comicsgate, yeah. I guess we should explain.
So, well, my perspective on Comicsgate, which doesn't necessarily align with Rich's, is that it was an attempt to gin up a controversy kind of following on the coattails of Gamergate. Many of the same people, much the same type of complaint, even though the specifics might have been different. But in general, it seemed to be that people wanted to try to create the same kind of divisiveness relating to comic books and comic fandom that was created during the Gamergate fiasco.
And Gamergate, for anyone who doesn't know, was, in most ways that matter, it continues, harassing and even threatening women game developers. And it was a whole movement, a whole process that went straight back to a bad breakup, basically. It's pretty crazy, but obviously it tapped into a lot of pent-up sexism and misogyny that, you know, of course was there.
So here is that conversation with Rich, which unfortunately does not include Leanne because we got our scheduling signals crossed. We'll have him on again soon. So I thought I had something to kick off the conversation that might be familiar to you. You may notice I'm wearing a very, very pink shirt.
I know what that shirt must be. Oh, my word.
Yep.
To be heart's content.
It's the shirt. What was that, 2018 when you gave those out?
No, it must have been long before then because I don't know. Actually, I don't know. It feels like earlier, but I don't know. Wow.
It's all a blur. Yeah. So,
folks, a good one. That was a very, very pink shirt.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When that box was opened, people were dazzled by the pinkness.
So they were. For folks, you obviously can't see this, but I think it was 2018, might have been 2017, New York Comic Con, all of us who were doing doing coverage of it. And it was, you know, it's an army for Bleeding Cool, right? So I guess this is also the opportunity for me to do a full disclosure that I've done some writing for Bleeding Cool.
You have.
I don't know that that's a conflict of interest. I don't think anybody's interests are conflicted.
I hope so. I like a good conflict of interest. I like to run towards them with my arms open. So I'm a big fan.
Well, the shirt, interestingly enough, says gender swap me, race bend me, ship me to your heart's content. I'm Bleeding Cool. Now,
wasn't it? I will always be Bleeding Cool. Or does it just say Bleeding Cool? I can't.
Oh, I am always. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
I see. I wrote that, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's stuck in my head.
You didn't have your secretary do it, so that's.
No. I'm an advertising copywriter, dear boy. That's what my trade is. So,
well,
know, they stick around in their head.
This is obviously, I mean, with my sarcastic voice on here, this was not random, I take it. I mean, it isn't like you said, give me a donut, I will always be bleeding cool, or hit me in the head with a watermelon or something. There is a reason why then that was a meaningful and appropriate thing to have on a shirt. So
there was a lot of debate back and forth at that time. Yeah. With people who are just devastated that characters like Miles Morales, Spider-Man existed and the like, or Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel existed. Mm-hmm. You're like, of course, now, if you actually had bought any of those copies back then, you could probably sell them for a few thousand. But, you know, if you're very happy. And, of course, you know, you've got the TV series, the movies, all these different spin-offs, and everyone's fine. Now it's all the new people that people now have trouble with. But, you know, all the people from, you know, 5 years ago or however long ago, oh, I mean, that's classic. Mm-hmm. That's all classic stuff now. So it's amazing how comic books and culture in general moves on. And all the things that people were outraged about 5 years ago are now the norm. And now they've got new things to be outraged at. And there's no concept that in 5 years' time, they'll be the norm as well. But that's the way.
Well, of course, Bleeding Cool wasn't, you know, didn't have any issues with these sorts of things. Didn't strike me as an activist-type site. But you all kind of got pushed into a place like that. I mean, didn't you? The conversations became so polarizing that
that's true. That is true. I mean, I tried, you know, okay, see, I don't do too much, but sometimes I dive in a little bit. It suddenly did seem to get polarizing, but again, things have moved on, and as I tell you, certain people who are dead set against some of those moves 5 years ago or so and now are very happy with them. Because that's just the way things are.
Oh, they're happy with them. You don't hear as much of that now?
I will talk. There were certain comic book retailers. I'm not actually going to name them because that would be mean. There are certain comic book retailers who are disgusted with the way that Marvel and DC were moving, say. But now, 5 years later, that they've realized the demand and they can actually make money off these things and they're doing quite well, That was never a problem. That was other people. That was never a problem. Now they have other things to be discussed about. But again, in 5 years' time, it'll all be different. There's one retailer I know who always had a problem with this kind of thing, but then he just realized, actually, why do I have a problem with this? I'm a retailer. I should just be buying and selling what people want or what they don't want and go along with that. And then discovered that some people did want this stuff as well. And so he bought that, and now he's very happy with it. But it's... One of the issues, I think, with comic books specifically, is that a lot of the people who sell comic books and who write and draw comic books and publish comic books are comic book fans. And comic book fans of a specific era. Like you grew up at a certain time during comics. These are the things that are familiar to you. And then you go into business, either writing, drawing, selling, publishing, whatever. But the world kind of moves on and the world demands that you have to move on with it. And sometimes that can cause a bit of friction. Either you have people will kind of double down, go into the bunker mentality, or they'll just, like Fred Hall's The Black Cloud, they'll just accept that what's coming is, even if they can't see it themselves, is probably the way things are going to be, and how can they create for it, or make money for it, or publish it, or whatever. And the successful people are those who are able to bend with the times.
So you think most of the pushback that these kind of discussions were creating weren't so much from sort of eye-spinning ideologues as they were just, well, let's call it a pickling effect. You know, people...
Nostalgia. Mm-hmm. It's the effect of nostalgia more than anything else, I would say. That's the biggest issue in pushing these things, I reckon. I mean, there may be some other aspects at play, I'm sure, but nostalgia has always been the big sticking point for everyone. I mean... This is not a new thing. This has been going on, since the the second caveman said that the first caveman's paintings were much better. These new ones are what they used to be. But that's always been the case. And people have always had a rosy-eyed view of what they liked when they were children. And when they're trying to apply it to what they see their kids being offered, and they're like, oh, no, it's terrible. But it's just a different perspective. And time changes the way you see things.
That's interesting because also around the same time, you started hearing this word, and I don't know if this is a real word. I don't know if it exists. You started hearing the word Comicsgate. or maybe even a little after that. Now, of course, you know, Gamergate, and again, this is for the benefit of any listeners, is, you know, in a nutshell, a bad relationship with a creepy dude that broke up. So, you know, he responds by, you know, unleashing misogynist hordes on the internet, all in the video game world. But you started getting this Comicsgate thing. Obviously, there was no bad breakup kicking it off. So it was, you know, seemed to be sort of the same sort of, you know, ideological, I want to watch my words and not speak too strongly, sort of adopted the word. But was it a thing? I mean, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was a thing. First of all, it was a, it was a bit like, it was a fetch thing. It was like, stop trying to make Comicsgate happen. For a while, that was definitely where people say, oh, well, this is like Comicsgate, just like Gamersgate. And nothing would happen. And it was again and again. It was like, but then eventually it did kind of catch on a thing. Initially, it was weird. It was kind of the cancel culture the other way around. It first kind of kicked off when it was trying to get rid of comic book creators who it was believed were overly political, not so much in their comics, but just in their general public stances. And they succeeded in two or three cases. And that, I think, gave them a bit of a heft. And also, so there's very much the idea of like, oh, we're being kept out of the comic book industry because we have conservative views. That was one. But then the same group of people were actually successfully trying to getting rid of people who didn't have conservative views. So it was a strange little mix. And I think it has become more. Some people see it as basically just like the old self-publishing booms of the 80s and 90s. It was seen the way, let's do something that's not Marvel and DC. So there's a group of people, and that's all it is for them. It's just say, let's just do independent comics. Mm-hmm. And somehow, if we call it Comicsgate, we get a whole load more load of customers. So that's one aspect of it. Others are definitely has a political mind to it. We don't want any of this social justice, wokery stuff, or how they may phrase it, in our comics. So we'll make these comics, which are guaranteed not to have any of these things in them. And so that's another aspect to it as well. And I don't know, generally it's a bit weird. It has to some degree become a grift in that you've created a kind of a, not exactly a Ponzi scheme, but certainly the idea that you're whipping this all up. It's supporting itself. The people who are making the comics are buying the comics in this kind of little circle, and they're creating money and value within them. And for some people, it's working. For two or three people, it's really working. And everybody else is trying to get some of that as well. But that's nothing new. I mean, that's pretty much what Mark Miller did back in the 90s. He just had different means, different methods, different books that he was trying to push. To some degree, it's about hype. But what it also does, and this is the other aspect, which is still going to be the sticking point for me, it does seem to engender and enrage comments and I would say a harassment against certain people for no other reason that they are considered targets. And for some people, that's a really horrible aspect of it. And I look at that and I think, well, that taints it so much that any aspect of it is pretty much unforgivable for me, because it becomes so much about, here's someone who's not in a great situation, we're going to make that situation worse. Rah, 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 etc. So that is my issue when it comes down to it, I guess. Yep, not so much a lot of the comics themselves, but some of the attitudes and stuff that goes around it.
Well, that phoniness, that you're talking about makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, you've got...
That sounds like an insult. It's not. It's just, there's a phoniness. It's just like, that's how hype work. That's how advertising works. It's just creating an impression of things. That's how it's always worked. That's what Stan Lee did. You know, so creating the illusion of desire, I think, and getting people on board for that. That's marketing. So that I don't specifically. So phoniness, I think, says, you know, is gives it a negative, which I didn't mean. But certainly, you know, it's a, one might say, because a marketing grift of one degree. Whether that's a bad thing or not, that would be your perspective, I guess.
But this is something really distinct from, say, you know, somebody like Chuck Dixon just going off and making his own comics, or honestly, even Ditko, right? I mean, who?
Oh yeah, because that's like one person, because that's one person doing their own thing. Yeah. But so I mean, I guess to some degree, I guess that's more like. We'll say it's more, I guess, like Mark Miller, in that it's a multitude of books. It's like it's a bunch of stuff, and other people get dragged into it and become part of it. But it's also it's marketing. It's like a self-perpetuating marketing thing. So if one book does well, then the person who does that book will send people over to help another book do well. And so it'll help support it that way, I guess. This is nothing new. This is the thing when people want to talk to me about Comicsgate, I'll always say is it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. This, all the different aspects of it, especially the positive things, have been done before. This is nothing new. It's just a new way of painting it in sometimes quite unpleasant packages.
So we've never been one big happy comics family, is what you're saying.
Oh, well, no. No, not at all. But no, it's more like this. I mean more like the methods of creating, producing, and publishing and selling comic books. Mm-hmm. It's all did. Oh, this, we're going to change things forever. No, you're just doing what Dave Sim did in the 90s, or Neil Adams did, or frankly, what Rob Liefeld did. With the Image Comics concept, every now and then this kind of thing comes around, and it's good and it's healthy that you bring in new people and you find ways outside of the mainstream publishers, because that's where new things will come from. Mm-hmm. What is pretty less healthy is some of the social attitudes around it, and some of the flotsam and jetsam, the things that end up hitting other people as a result, and that's not so great. And that's more about what's happening now rather than what's happening then. When Image was launching, all the most you ever had were things like debates in the back pages of Comic Buyer's Guide and stuff, as opposed to sending out reams of phone numbers of suspect retailers that people can call at work and things like that. So there's a difference between those two approaches, I would say. Do you remember the boxing match between Peter David and Todd McFarlane?
I do.
It was a debate. But yeah. It was all publicized and pushed as a boxing match, and it was. that's part of the spectacle, and that's part of the fun. So that, again, you have these kind of debates about what's right, what's wrong, or how things should work across the generations. Mm-hmm. That's the way it should be. It's just this time it's got a little bit nastier. But one thing, here's the other thing I've noticed. Certainly in the last couple of years. I think because Comicsgate did make itself more of an insular circle, they're grabbing a few people in, but they're very much that self-supporting thing. More people, basically, there was less interaction with people outside of Comicsgate, and so it became to some degree it became talking to itself, which is something that happens with all sorts of marketing schemes. But also, they still needed their enemies; they still needed people to fight against. So they started fighting against themselves, and so the biggest drama in any kind of Comicsgate stuff over the last few years has been Comicsgate on Comicsgate action, if you know what I mean. It's people who've been pushed out, people who there were like purity tests, you're not conservative enough, or you're too conservative, or you hate gays, you have to go, or you don't hate gays enough, you can't go, all this kind of stuff. And so they started kind of like turning in on each other. There was fights over the trademark, who owns the trademark, that went to the courts. And to some degree, everybody else kind of moved on. Because while to some degree, the Comicsgate was helping small independent creators sell books in a way that they hadn't been able to before. What's really changed that is the book market. It's graphic novels being sold, especially middle grades and YA graphic novels are selling in hundreds of thousands, in millions of copies. And almost some of the very same creators who Comicsgate was targeted against, people like Shannon Hale, has just sold a million of the latest Friends Forever graphic novel, because that's where the big boom is creating graphic novels for kids and teenagers. Sure. Who knew? Who knew? apparently comics were for kids after all. And so books that have been able to appeal to them and have been able to appeal to their interests, and honestly, it's going to be a little bit more socially justice than other books might be, have been doing very well. And now Marvel and DC would really like a slice of that. So it's quite handy for Marvel and DC, because they've got a whole bunch of these characters, the kind of people that Comicsgate were dead set against, how dare these characters exist, who are perfect for the middle grade YA audience. Mm-hmm. And so you'll be able to push things like Marvel probably did it best, but earliest things like Squirrel Girl and Ms. Marvel, but now moving forward with things like Miles Morales, they've done a deal with Scholastic. DC does a similar deal with Penguin. So we're seeing much more of those books doing very well. The Titans books, graphic novels from DC, have been outselling the Batman comic book. You know what I mean? It's just because they found a different audience. Mm-hmm. So it's if you're looking for the big growth in comic book sales, in independent comic book sales, it's there. It's people like Rainer Talgamir and Dav Pilkey kind of led the way, and a lot of other people are kind of coming in their slipstream. Like I said, every now and then another thing happens and everyone tries to get in on it. And now it's why graphic novels, the middle grade graphic novels. 10 years time, it'll be something else.
Yeah, although it seems like this one could take.
One of the nice things is because again, book stars are basically doing what the newsstand used to do: introduce kids to comics at a time when it's the best time to read comics, was when you were a kid, because you don't have to learn how to read comics; it just comes naturally. If you come to them when you're in your 20s, you have to start the whole visual language thing again. You're too set in your ways. If you pick up a comic when you're 8 or 9, it's easy.
Yeah.
It's just natural. So what are they going to be wanting to read in 10, 20, 30 years' time?
Well, and it takes, this effect happening also moves the industry out of some of these conversations that can be self-destructive that we were just talking about, because those conversations get left behind by a changing industry.
That's kind of what I'm saying. It's to some degree, I think the comics gate big conversation where everyone in the industry was involved in talking about it. That's moved on.
Mm-hmm.
People have got something else to talk about instead now. And it's the how do I sell my comics to these damn kids?
Right. Okay.
So that's the new conversation. So again, 5 years time, we may have a different conversation. I don't know what it'll be yet.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to finding out. Hopefully, I'll still be here reporting. But I mean, it's like I'm still, reporting on comics as sold in comic book stores. That's always probably going to be my focus. I'll stick with that because that's what I guess I'm good at. In fact, I mean, I've got lots of good contacts at Marvel and DC and Image. I find bits of information about Boom, whatever. I don't quite have those contacts at Random House or Scholastic yet. Yet. We'll see. But that's where I'm heading to. Reading Cult has our coverage over the last year or so has definitely increased, looking at the kind of stuff that Scholastic and HMH are putting out. There's a whole bunch of publishers that are just starting who are just publishing graphic novels and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And it's really fantastic to follow them and see this kind of stuff that they're putting out and creating. There's genuinely, we're getting closer to the Japanese model of publishing graphic novels. And I don't think people have really noticed this so much yet. But the idea that you have graphic novels for any topic, it doesn't have to be fiction. It can be anything. It can be recipe books. It can be anything. Comic books can find a way to do all sorts of narratives. And in America, it's mostly been action adventure over the years, with a bit of romance here and there, but mostly action adventure. And now it's finding its feet. Comics can be anything. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. A lot of us have been trying to say that for so many years, right?
Yeah. Now is the time. I was doing a story about various gardening graphic novels and just realizing that's now a thing. Gardening graphic novels are now a thing. So there you go.
All right. Well, it's funny. This conversation didn't quite go the way I thought it would, but you've given me so much that I think this is going to be much more interesting.
I'm happy to. If you want to go back on anything or ask me anything, please jump on me.
Well, I mean, one thing, it kind of goes back to, it's another political angle again, because we're political junkies, but some of the complaining and the whining in the comments section hasn't been framed in terms of, this is too woke or this, whatever. It's been that constant canard you get of comics aren't supposed to have politics. Comics are apolitical. And I'm talking, mainstream superhero comics, idea that politics are something you might take off to your little indie world. But my superheroes, my mainstream, my Marvel, my DC, they're supposed to be apolitical. Have they ever been?
No. I'm a political cartoonist. I know my cartoonist history. The earliest comic books, the earliest cartoons are all political. Superhero comics themselves are very specifically political because right wing, generally, because the concept of the superhero is the idea of individual responsibility. It's the idea that with great power comes great responsibility. Now, that is a strong conservative right-wing concept. is if you can do something to do it's your duty as a band. So that's why it ties up into the history of superheroes, comes from things like private detectives and cowboys and those kind of stories, more than anything else, and police comics as well. It's the idea of standing up is your duty as a person, not to rely on the government, not to rely on the state, but to make a difference. And whether that's with a gun, or whether that's with a web shooter, or whether, there is a strong aspect of politics to superheroes. And now that can be used in very different ways. You can react against it, or you can double down with it. Either way are both fine ways of doing things. But the most simple superhero stories from the 60s was fundamentally the concept of preserving the status quo. So it's defeating bank robbers, it's keeping everything the way people are, kind of stuff, putting things back the way they should be, which is a very strong conservative concept and fashion that was played out. Now, and then other writers took that and did different things with it. So you found different aspects of allegory, like empowering the powerless, which you can see in things like the X-Men comics and things, people who don't have power who are given powers. And what does that mean? And so you can start to use the concept of power fantasy to address other aspects in society. And that's kind of going to involve politics. If you make them the simplest you can, there's still going to be a political aspect to it. So to say politics do not belong in my comics, then superhero comics fundamentally misunderstands what a superhero is and the ideas behind it and what our power fantasies mean and what we could do if we had the power to do something. If we could change things, what would we do? That's politics. Fundamentally right there. Superhero power wish fantasy is just how could we change the world for the better? Mm-hmm. Now, that might be all the worse. Or how would we change the world if we could? So absolutely fundamentally, superhero, more than most other genre fictions, because of the concept of superpowers, is going to be more political, because it's just going to emphasize an aspect. So you look at things like the precedents of things like superheroes, things like Sherlock Holmes, for example. Mm-hmm. And he's very much a figure who is conserving the way things are. And so if you give, now Superman does the same. Of course, saying that, an awful lot of those early Superman stories were all about beating up union busters and bad landlords and what you might call more left-wing targets. So, but the means of doing so is probably more of a right-wing thing. So there's always been stuff going on. There's always been political stuff going on in comics. So sometimes it can be an allegory. Sometimes it can be absolutely it's text rather than subtext. But again, that's been there from the beginning as well. So if people really, really complain about they don't want the politics in their comics, well, all you have to do is find some comics where it's less obvious. Because if certainly, one thing we've done on Bleeding Cool, which I do enjoy doing, is whenever there's been a big hoo-ha about some comic book that's done something that's considered far too political, and how dare they, is I do a mock outrage article about the exact same topic, picking a comic, say from the 80s or the 70s, that is exactly the same thing. And I will be totally outraged about this terrible comic book until about halfway through when I realise it was published 30 years ago. And that's quite a fun thing to do. Because, one of the things, I guess, doing Bleeding Cool for so long is you get a sense of history. More, I've seen this before. We've been here before. The complaints about this. But no, we've already had this like 30 years ago. So I'm able to at least grab a bit of perspective.
You know, what you say also crystallizes some of it too, because it's very interesting. I have always looked at superheroes as sort of archetypes of a more liberal standpoint, because it gets away from that sort of Republican social conservative right-wing social Darwinism. Where, almost that Ayn Randian kind of thing. It's like the vanguard should be looking out for themselves, and you don't worry about the little people. The little people are just, they play the role of being the little people. And the idea that superheroes do have this responsibility to step in. And yeah, I suppose I do then project that onto making it an institutional message. So, but what you're saying also makes total sense. So suggests there's a few different ways in, right?
As I was trying to say, there's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's to ignore it completely. We can debate how much there is, what degree it is, which way it is. we can absolutely, but say it's not there at all, and it never was there when I was a kid. That's nonsense. You can pick up any superhero comic book from any genre, open it up, read it, you will see politics. Or other, if you can't see them, that's down to you. Because the very concept of a superhero is political, in one way or the other. So it's there, you know. But you know, the thing is, when you're 5 or 6, you just think it's great.
Yeah.
You don't think it's a political argument in a way, or you can't. It's not something that bothers you in a textual way. It's all about subtext. So you might enjoy it. Maybe you don't entirely know why. That's the big thing about superheroes. When you read them when you're kids, you think they're great. You're not entirely sure why you think they're great, but it's lots of cool people beating each other up in a very cool fashion. But there's other stuff going on that makes the superhero comic book, I think, appeal. It's almost like it's the comic book that's most perfect sometimes, because it presents certain ideas in certain ways that just cuts through any of your critical faculties, goes straight into your brain.
Yeah.
And it's when we get older, we can look back at them and reread them and stuff. But I mean, I know people who've read things like Watchmen and Dark Knight and didn't think they were political because they read them when they were about 9. And they're just really cool stories about superheroes. And they were.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, so many of these people who have been arguing that they should be apolitical, you know, they're like, they were reading comics in the 90s and stuff. You know, they were X-Men fans when they were being so explicit, you know, with the legacy virus, you know, they've had an AIDS parallel going on, and come on. but yeah, you're right. They're young, they're kids, it's good characters, and it doesn't penetrate, and it doesn't then stick with them. That makes total sense.
That's what I reckon. Now, of course, I'd happily debate this back and forth with anyone who may have different aspects of believing as well. I'm not saying that I am definitely right on that, but this is definitely the way that it looks from this perspective. And certainly all the evidence seems to bear it out. But yeah, I'm always happy to come back forth. Like I said, we've come at this from different perspectives on certainly what politics were at play. Yeah. It may also help that, I mean, let's be honest, I'm British, and we have a certain take on things. I mean, you know, when the British creators came to the American superheroes, and they were a little bit more like, hey, hang on, while they thought they were great, I would say that British creators could definitely see the conservative politics at play in superheroes and wanted to play with that and see what would happen if you spun it the other way around. And you can see that sometimes, like works of satire, like things like Judge Dredd, which is the American police movie, just taken forward a few years and just amped up the concept of what police is.
Yeah.
And you can see that through stuff that Alan Moore would do with Captain Britain and the likes, just taking the concept of the superhero and just amping it and looking at all the interesting political aspects, Miracle Man as, Marvel Man as well. So that's, again, I think there might be, I'm seeing it from this perspective because I'm British. I've grown up with, well, almost like we've had more of things like anti-heroes, things like Robin Hood and the likes, people who are fighting against the states. So we almost have a way, I think when it comes to heroic fiction, Brits have always wanted to deconstruct from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when you deconstruct, you find out all the different bits are made out of and you put them back together in different interesting shapes. And maybe that's what a lot of this reaction is against, is the deconstruction of the superhero. I don't know. Stop, leave it alone. Don't play with it. Don't show us how the sausage is made.
Anyway. Right. We hate it when it's done, but we can't look away when it's done, and we actually kind of love it when it's done. So, absolutely. Yeah, it's a mess, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us for this round of Open World Chat. We'll see you next time. Our music is by Chris Piatek.